have a tale of youth for this one? I do.
Not especially.
Maybe if I say my one, it might provoke something in you.
Mark the memory, maybe. Let's just jump into it. I'm Martin, and I'm joined by Joe, and welcome to Bite Me.
We're back, baby, after a couple of weeks away.
Yeah, apologies for the radio silence. My grandfather passed away, so we took a couple of weeks just to, out of respect. So we'll probably dedicate this episode to him. Raymond William Havel was his name, and I'd just like to say thank you to everyone who sent me really nice messages about it. Especially you, Joe. You were great messaging me pretty much every day.
It's funny, you know, like, it's funny the people that sort of, and I'll talk about me now for a second, but the people that step in when the shit hits the fan, you know? If that's when you realise the sort of community you've built, people get in touch. I'm really, really, you know, on the lead up to Christmas, somebody. But yeah. How are you doing?
I'm all right. He was 90 and he had been in hospital since August. So I did the majority of my crying in August because I thought he was going to die then. So, but he was a stubborn old bastard and just hung on because he was 89 when he went into hospital. He celebrated his 90th birthday in October. So I think he was hanging on to be 90. So
the other reason why we had a quick pause in recording is because I work in retail and obviously I'm utterly invaluable in my work. So I've been having to do the most peculiar set of hours you've ever heard in your life. Overnights, 5 a.m. starts, you name it, I've done it. So that's another reason why. But we're back on track now for Out of Sight, Out of Mind.
Yeah. So Joe, you remember when you first saw this episode?
I have always really liked this episode, and I'm pleased to say I really, really liked it. I think this might be a bit of an appreciated gem episode, for reasons we'll get into. But yeah, I first watched this, oh Christ, should we just say a long time ago? Yeah. But I have always liked this one.
It's been 84 years.
It's been 84. No, okay. Move us on quick.
Yeah, I've always...
How about you?
I've always enjoyed this one. I think, yeah, it's underappreciated. It does have some of the worst acting in the whole of Buffy, though.
Are you talking about Marcy?
No, I'm talking about between Willow and Xander when they're laughing and talking about Cordelia's fire. They're terrible.
I didn't believe that for a second, you know, when they're like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like, what? Okay. And these are two very reliable actors, aren't they, as well?
Yeah, this is the worst they are in the entire show. But maybe it's just the script wasn't good enough. Maybe the lines wouldn't have worked coming out of Derek Jacobi, maybe.
But it did. What I did like about that moment is Buffy felt excluded.
Yes.
And so it was sort of going to show that even though this episode is about Marcy and how she feels, actually everybody can feel like, you know. And I think there's a moment in this episode where like most people have a moment where they're sort of on the sidelines of what's going on.
Yeah, it's
I certainly had this when I was a kid, you know.
Well, I guess the closest experience I have is when you join a new job. And everyone's already there and they've got their friendships and they've been there a year. You've been there a week. So, of course, they've got references and they still miss the person that you replaced. So you kind of get this little bit of a hostility towards you.
I will never forget when I started a job at Gardner's, which is now the number one wholesaler in the whole of Europe. It's a big operation. I started working in the office and it was exactly as you described. Everybody knew each other. It was a massive team. It was a huge office. And one lady who was approaching 60, Ella Earle, came up to me on my first day and she said, hello, my name is Ella, I want you to have lunch with me and come and sit with my
oh.
And it was the kindest thing I could ever remember happening on like a first day. And me and her, we've sort of lost touch now because she's moved across the world, but we were tight. People could never understand why a 20-year-old and a 60-year-old were this close friends, but she was so kind to me. And you know, you just sort of click with somebody.
Yeah.
Wherever you are, Ella, I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, work relationships are weird because you could be 19 with a 54-year-old best work friend.
Excuse me, I know where those relationships usually end up. In the stationery cupboard.
Yeah, we've all been there. And,
although my sort of personal tale of you for this one is, weirdly enough, I used to wish I was Marcy. So I liked at school to be the one who was a bit hidden away and not noticed. And I was relentless. I was gay, as be gay. And I had a lot of focus. You know, people would throw things, people would hit me, people would back against the wall when I walk past, you know, backs to the walls, boys. Nobody wants to be in the changing rooms with me or anything like that. And everybody hurled just terrible things. So I was watching this going, oh, I want to be Marcy. I want to be invisible so I can go around and torture everybody. What about you? What was your sort of experience at school in this regard?
I was bullied because I had an overbite and stuff like that. So I used to get people shouting, "What's up, Doc?"
Was it that bad?
Oh, cars would U-turn to come.
Shut up.
Oh, no, I'm serious. I remember being out with one of my sister's friends once who hadn't really hung around with us. And she got so angry at something that someone said to me. She wanted to go and smash their windscreen in. And because it was just white noise to me at this point, I hadn't even registered that this person had said something. But I remember her, she really wanted to go and just smash this car up. And I was just like, I didn't even notice.
Your overbite was so bad, you were causing car crashes.
I'll send you a picture later, because there aren't many pictures of me before I had my cosmetic surgery to fix it.
I wonder if the Bite Me audience are curious, you know, whether you should put a picture in the thread below once this is advertised. Well, I'm pleased to say he's a handsomer figure of a man now, so whatever corrective surgery you might have had...
Yeah, none of it's natural.
You can't see this because I can see him on the video, but he just went, "Oh, stop," in the most gayest way I've ever seen. He flicked his wrist at me.
Oh, you.
Anyway, sorry. Oh, you. I thought this was the best. I've said this a lot in series one, but I actually think this might be the best marriage of supernatural stroke teenage angst issues that we see. I thought the way that, you know, the flashback sequences where you see them being just so mean to her in the toilet. Yeah. Cordelia's, you know, there with Harmony and her friends, and Marcy's trying to get a word in, and she's saying a joke about the toupee, and then Cordelia eventually just nicks the joke and just goes, "Excuse me, we're talking, bugger off." And even the teacher in the class who is asking the students, you know, give me answers, and she's putting her hand up and nobody notices her, not even the authority thing, and suddenly her hand just starts to vanish. Yeah. That is the best visual representation of what Buffy is about. Teen issues stroke with a supernatural twist.
Oh, it's so good. And I've been in that situation where I've chipped in something to a conversation, everyone's just ignored me, but then the more popular one will say it and everyone just guffaws with laughter. Yeah, I've been there. This is great. And the fact the teacher's even ignoring her is, I certainly happened to me, because teachers would sit around talking about what other bucktooth characters there were. But the 90s were a different time. Like you said, you grew up in a time where the worst thing you could be was gay at school.
Yeah. Now it's the coolest thing in the world.
I remember people
unfortunately, it's moved on to trans now, has it? Yeah. Now that's sort of,
I remember people used to ask, what would you rather be, gay or dead?
Really?
Yeah, that was a thing in Mitcham. I don't know if that was...
I'd like to be gay and dead, a gay vampire. Oh, imagine.
Yeah.
I remember, talk about an overbite.
I remember saying I'd rather be gay, and they went, yeah, of course you would.
Yeah, but you got to remember everyone thought you was anyway. So.
That's true, yeah.
We have to talk about Cordelia.
She's so well used in this episode. I think this is her use of her this whole series.
I think I sent a message to a mate as I was watching it saying, this is the episode where she's gone from being a quippy bitch that provides lots of comedy to being an actual character that they're thinking about.
Oh, yeah, she's a full member of the team here. This is her genesis.
And I loved the bit, because they're still sort of mocking her a lot. And then there's a scene between her and Buffy where she turns around and, what's the line? I wrote it down. Hang on. I could be surrounded by people and I'm completely alone, she says. And then Buffy goes to her, then why do you work so hard to be popular? And she says, it beats being alone by yourself. And suddenly you see Cordelia in a whole new light. Before, you just saw her as this sort of shining light of her social circle. And now actually you realise she's just as lost as everybody else is.
Oh, and it's so true. So, so true. I can't remember what the line was, but there was a line Cordelia says, and Penny turned to me and went, oh, Joe's going to love that.
Oh, no. What was it?
I should have written it down. I can't remember what one it was.
Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll just leave a space in the recording here. Insert the line there. Okay? But no, I just thought, Charisma Carpenter grabbed hold of the opportunity and ran with it. And think of what we've had so far. She's been screaming at dead people in the locker. She's been singing that dreadful song in the puppet show. You know, she's been used pretty much. We've just been pointing and laughing at her. But this sort of sympathetic look at her character. And this is the Cordelia going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, this is Cordelia right up until Angel when they then reevaluate her there.
And as you tell me, she gets even better, apparently.
Oh, yeah. By the time she finishes an Angel, she's a character I liked. Whereas I remember hating her.
What's been missing, I think, is that you've got the Scoobies, which is Giles, Buffy, Dawn? Sorry, Giles, Buffy, Willow, and Xander. But they all kind of get on. They're quippy, but they get on. You need someone in there who's going to cause friction all the time. And that's why season two's so... You know, I can still remember an exchange in, I think it's the Judge Two-Parter, where Xander goes, Cordelia goes, oh no, we've hit rock bottom. And Xander goes, I've got an idea. And then Cordelia goes, oh fuck, we've hit a lower place or something like that. You know, like she never stops being Cordelia, even when she's part of the team. And that's what I really like.
Oh yeah, she's great. And what I loved about this is Giles, Willow, Xander, they claim to have never met this girl. And then it turns out they wrote in her yearbook.
Yeah. What's the death thing in the yearbook? Have a good summer or something.
A nice summer. Yeah. Willow says, I wrote have a great summer. I cared.
I've still got my book from when I left school. And, you know, like I've kind of ridden through the bullying stage at this point.
I've still got it, the blue book where everyone wrote in. It was basically just like an ex. And pretty much people making terrible jokes about sexuality. But they did make me chuckle now. Sort of 30 years on, once I've had a load of great sex, I don't care what they think anymore.
Oh. Did someone ever say anything so homophobic to you it was funny?
Frequently on my podcast, yes. People are terrible towards me, honestly. I don't bring it on myself. I'm so chaste and innocent.
Exactly.
No, the most homophobic thing I ever heard was what my dad said, and not my son, you're gay. Dad, wherever you are. Sorry, this really has become our personal therapy session, this podcast, hasn't it?
Well, one thought I kept having through this is that there's a flute used a lot, and I kept thinking post-American Pie, it's really difficult to hear anyone mention a flute around Alison Hannigan.
Well, you're quiet. Alison Hannigan plus flute equals kinky things.
Somebody posted her audition video on Instagram of American Pie, and it's where she's talking about where she put the flute.
I remember spitting out popcorn when she said that line. I just the last thing I ever expected. Had she been Willow at that point? She had.
Oh, yeah, she'd been Willow for 2 years. That's what she was famous for.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I've got to say, you know, there was one part of this that I really enjoyed, and that was the teaser where we got to go into the men's locker room for a little while. That was very nice. And I have to say, Cordelia's done all right for herself. He had a very nice body, that man.
Yeah, he's a bit of a prick, isn't he?
We don't see him again, do we?
No.
I don't remember seeing him. Because very quickly, Cordelia has a romance with one of the Scoobies too.
Yeah.
But yeah, because he says, doesn't he? He's first of all, he's like, oh, Cordelia, he's being romantic with her. The second he's away, he's basically saying to his mates, oh, yeah, I'm going to fuck her.
Yeah, that does happen. Well, it did happen back. I don't know if it happens anymore. When I was at school, that used to happen.
I can't imagine things are better. What did you think about the angle they took with Buffy, where she used to be the make or whatever it was in California? There's a sequence where she watches Cordelia getting ready, and it's jealousy, isn't it? She's watched, that's who she used to be in her old school. And in some ways, you might say she's sort of, you know, she's fallen under. And in other ways, you might think she's risen higher than that sort of thing. But she is looking at her with envy.
Oh, she's envious, but I've always seen it as Buffy wanted to get away from that life. She wasn't happy with that. That's why she actively chooses to hang around with Willow. It's because she doesn't want to fall back in with that crowd. But it doesn't mean she doesn't miss the attention.
When we get to season 3, we have the homecoming queen off.
It's amazing. Do you remember when the two of them are trying to get votes? One's doing chocolate. Cordelia's giving out money, for God's sakes. She's like, you're so desperate, Cordelia. You're handing out money. Oh, it's great.
That whole American kind of culture of having a homecoming and a prom queen and all that, we don't really have that. Well, we didn't have that here. Because, yeah, famously, when we left school, they offered us a balloon race. Because we didn't do...
A balloon race? What school did you go to? I had a river cruise down the Thames.
I went to Tamworth Manor High School, and it was a high school. It wasn't what they deem a secondary. And I didn't know Mitcham had this other system. I remember when I got with the first woman I ever loved, and I was just talking. I was like, oh, you know, when you're in high school. And she was like, high school? And I was like, yeah, high school, you know, when you're in secondary school. And I was like, what's that? And I thought she meant middle school. Because that's the second school you were. I didn't know there was any other system. And yeah, so I went to a high school. It's called a high school. And we didn't do proms or anything. But we got this letter going, we're going to do a balloon race. And you got to give us £2. And the balloon is your, it represents your spirit going off into the world and your freedom.
How cheap. You truly had the budget prom there, didn't you?
I didn't go. I thought, I'm not paying £2 to let a balloon go in a field.
Anyone in America must be listening to this, must be appalled at this Poundland. Oh, no, what do they call it in America? Budgeons. This Budgeons prom you're talking about.
Dollar Tree.
Can I tell you a funny story about the river cruise down the Thames?
Yeah, go on.
Well, so I still had my first girlfriend then, Catherine Gregory, right? And we'd done a bit of snogging and stuff. And she'd been trying to get her hands down my trousers, okay? And because obviously I'm gay, so nothing was going on down there. So I used to sort of tighten up my belt a bit, you know? So she couldn't get down there. She's really trying to get, and she's going, are you all right? Loosen your belt. And I'm like, no, it's all right. Let's just kiss, you know? Anyway, we went on the river cruise, and it was that night that she chose, because she couldn't get into my trousers to dump me. And so she literally, on the river cruise, she was like, I don't think this is working. And the relief on my face must have been palpable. I was like, oh, thank God. Anyway, I came out at school the week after. Like, we still had a couple of weeks left, and everyone was talking about it. And she comes up to me and she goes, yeah, what's this I hear you're gay? I never forget this conversation. It was a really bright, sunny day. What's this I hear? You're gay. And I went, oh, yeah, sorry. She goes, and then she looked really sad. And she went, did I turn you gay? Like that. And I went, no, not at all. I said, I've always been gay. And then she suddenly got angry. And she went, so you've always been gay, even when we were going out with each other? I was like, oh, I can't win this conversation. Anyway, we were good mates for quite a long time after that. Yeah, that's my most vivid memory of my prom, is being dumped.
Yeah,
and being happy about it.
My sister left school in 2000 and she didn't have one. But then I've got cousins who left in like 2002, 2004, and they had proms. So I guess it was something that started to come in then.
I don't like the idea of it, though, because I feel as if you're not from an affluent family, you're like the affluent families, they're all going to be in designer gear and stuff like that. And it's a real kind of display of who's got money. And who hasn't, you know?
Popular. I wouldn't have had a date to the pro. If we had had one, I would not have had a date to go with.
Because you're over by it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I didn't get a girlfriend until I was 17 and in college after I'd had the surgery.
I mean, I'm astonished. I've seen pictures of me back then that I had girlfriends or boyfriends. I was such a scruffy lout, honestly. Can I bring us around to the director of this episode? This is the only episode of Buffy that Razor Bidea directed. I thought the direction was exemplary in this. She has to do a lot of, or is it
he?
I'm not sure. That's an ambiguous name.
He died. He was born in 1929 and died in 2011. Wow.
He has to do a lot of sequences of things floating in the air, sort of POV shots of the invisible girl walking around and stuff like that. And there was a sequence where Buffy finds her lair. And it's all just done with camera work, lighting, and music, because there's no dialogue, and the flute play. And it's like something out of a really creepy horror movie. It's really effective. Razor directed 430 episodes of television across loads of different genres. So this is like a veteran
of television. He actually directed three of my favorite episodes of Star Trek Deep as well. There's one where called Past Tense, where they go back in time to the Bell Riots. It's a massive treatise on homelessness and basically what will happen if we don't do better now. And a two-parter in season four called Homefront and Paradise. He directed one of those too. So this is a guy who knows his stuff, you know? And I think for Buffy to be attracting somebody like this in this first season, because they haven't really got their core staple of directors yet, have they? They're sort of trying people out. And I think this is a good match. So I'm not quite sure why he didn't do any more.
Yeah, maybe he was just busy afterwards. What do you make of
130 episodes? It sounds like he was busy, yeah.
Would you make a Marcy in this, played by Cleo Duvall, who I think I first saw in The Faculty?
I knew the face.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out. I thought she was good. The one part of the episode that didn't really work for me was when they're doing the voiceovers into the scenes. Sometimes there's a bit where she's supposedly sort of walking around her lair, stressed out, and she's like, Cordelia, the total bitch, and all of this. And it felt a bit weird, the voiceover they were putting in action. But I thought she was great. I thought, especially in those flashback scenes, I wish we could have seen more of her.
Yeah, I'm surprised she didn't come back at all.
Well, please, can we talk about the last scene, which is one of the best tags I think they ever do.
Yeah.
Go on, you do it.
So, yeah, it's when we see, throughout the episode, you see these two guys in black suits just hanging around. You're like, oh, who are they? Maybe Cordelia's hired them. Maybe, you know, she's rich. Maybe she's hired security. And then you learn that they're FBI agents. And this has happened before to kids across the entire world. And they've got a school where they teach these people to be assassins.
It's so great, isn't it? Turn to page 54, assassination and infiltration. Why the hell didn't we see this all again?
Yeah, it's such a cool concept for a series. But then, I don't know, how do you do a lead series where your lead character's invisible?
I swear there was a series for the Invisible Man, wasn't there?
I suppose there would have been. But yeah, he put the tape on and stuff, didn't he?
You know what it is, though? It's the first inference, because we've always seen the supernatural stuff via the Hellmouth and the school. And it's the first suggestion that there are organisations outside of all of that know about this stuff and are utilising it. And obviously in season four, that becomes a massive part of the show.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we get some great Snyder moments in this as well.
Oh, my God, Snyder. Hang on, I've got a line here. You ready for this? There are no dead students here this week. I love that line.
Like when he says dead, what do you mean? What are you, ghouls?
And the bit where he goes, what is it? Sue? Who's going to sue? Oh, isn't he wonderful?
Oh, he's terrific, yeah.
I don't know whether he's better when he's being sinister or whether he's on the back foot and he's sort of anxious, but he's just brilliant no matter what. I always wondered, you know, if he was only supposed to be around for a little bit and they just liked him so much, they gave him sense.
Yeah, he's so good. Such a great addition to the cast. We also get Harmony referring to Giles as the creepy librarian. Yeah. Which I completely understand, because what would you think of this guy that's always with these three teenagers?
Yeah, well, nowadays that would be frowned on considerably, wouldn't it?
And it's not like he's always with them because they're always in the library. He's just always with them. Yeah, of course somebody would think there was something going on there.
I think Snyder has a line in a later episode about, because he sort of knows what's going on, doesn't he? He does know about Buffy, and he knows about vampire slaying, all of that. Is he already in the pocket of the mayor? Is that the idea? I know the mayor doesn't come along with it, but is the idea that he does, or he knows about?
Yeah, I don't know if he knows the full extent, but he knows there's something weird in Sunnydale.
It's fabulous. Okay, can I ask you a question then, please? Because one thing that was completely omitted from this episode was how on earth Giles, Xander and Willow escaped from being gassed at the end of the episode.
So yeah.
What the hell?
We get the return of Angel. Missing for a while, he's back. And it's the first time he and Giles meet and interact.
Yeah, and they would go on to have a very interesting, don't they? Especially post-Passion.
Yeah.
So basically just wants him dead from that point on.
What do you make of his return here?
I thought it was really nice, but all of that sequence had nothing to do with this episode whatsoever. It's setting up Prophecy Girl, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is it's weird because Buffy seems to it does the sort of arcs really, whereas that just felt like a scene plonked in to set up the what is it, the codex or something like that, the book that's important for the last episode. Doesn't Giles read the codex and that's how he learns about Buffy's death?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. But yeah,
but, I mean, kinda need it's David Boreanaz. Of course it's great to have him back. He's so handsome.
Yeah, it's a bit weird because he goes on to be a much stronger character in Angel. So it's weird to go back to this where he's just kind of skulking around and moping after Buffy.
I do wonder though, you know, I'll be interested to see what he gets up to because I think his best run the middle to the end of two, where the show basically becomes, they may as well just call it Angel because it's less about Buffy. It's far, or they may as well just call it Angelus.
Yeah. Oh, he's such a great character. Excuse me,
don't you think I didn't notice you posting online last week a video of David Boreanaz saying, look, I'm not gay, but look at him. I saw that.
Yeah, somebody asked who was the sexiest vampire or something. And I was like, well, I'm not even gay, but come on.
The only man that could possibly turn your head.
Oh, dear. Mind you, I don't know, you know, latter-day Alison Hannigan, you know, probably could turn my head.
Oh, especially with the black hair.
Oh, just, yeah, she could do anything she likes to me at that point.
This episode went on to inspire a Smallville episode called Shimmer. And that's where there's an invisible teenager terrorizing the school. And it was directly influenced by this episode of Buffy.
Do they reference it?
No, but the writers of it said that they took a lot of inspiration from Buffy as a whole show, but in particularly this episode.
Did you watch Smallville?
Yeah, I've got a Superman t-shirt on now. I'm a huge fan of Superman, but I always struggled with Smallville. I would kind of
you are in a and Superman. Out. I watched the first three seasons. And then I thought, no, okay. And I thought series three was incredibly strong. I hear sort of series five onwards, it just goes off the boil.
It does.
I thought its strengths were its core characters, Lex, Clark, not Lois, what was her?
Yeah, Lana.
What's the girl? Lana. I thought their Monster of the Week episodes were really, and that's something that Buffy does brilliant. And Smallville did less good. But Smallville did a ton of that across its run. It was always doing Monster of the Week episodes. And I remember seeing the reviews coming in TV Zone and things like that. And it was getting like twos and threes out of ten. I was like, oh, I won't watch that.
Yeah, the openings and the finales were always brilliant. But yeah, it was all the 20 episodes in the middle that were just like...
It certainly had a bigger budget than Buffy. Because I remember some of the special effects scenes being pretty...
Oh, absolutely.
But it didn't have the heart and it didn't have the smarts of Buffy. There was something missing in the writing, I think, that Buffy just has in spades.
Yeah, I wonder what that is. Because you can't really quantify it or explain what it is. There's just an energy and a heart to Buffy.
I think I could probably put my finger on one thing. Buffy has a huge sense of humor about it. And Smallville was very serious part. Like they did comedy, but it was like Clark was a very serious character. Lana was a very serious character. Like the only person that wasn't too serious was that Alison Mack that went and got cancelled later on. But she was just like the quirky reporter, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Whereas every single character in Buffy, I think in every single episode, has a moment that's just hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right, actually, what you're saying.
People don't say that too often, so I appreciate it. Thank you very much. There was another angle to this episode I really liked as well, and that was the fact, I call it procedural Buffy. It's like Sunnydale CSI. I think I said it to you earlier in the season, where there's a mystery and they've got to investigate, and then they suddenly realise the common factor of all the people being attacked is Cordelia, and then the episode focuses in on her. And in that way, it is structured a bit like a police drama. It's not a police drama, obviously, but it follows the same sort of beats. Then the killer is revealed, then we find out the motive, and then you always have the sequence at the end where the killer threatens the hero, and then the killer is caught. The end. But I like that. I like the sort of the formula.
What I loved is that the whole way through, Willow wears a Scooby-Doo t-shirt.
Yeah. Have they started calling themselves the Scooby Gang yet?
No, I don't think that comes into the second series. It's definitely before Sarah Michelle Gellar did Scooby-Doo.
Another thing that really stood out to me as well was how nasty Marcy was. Like, I figured, you know, I've seen episodes with Invisible before. Like, do you remember in series 6, was it Gone, when Buffy's invisible?
Yeah.
And, you know, the worst she does is have sex with Spike. And you know, it's really sort of lame comedy. Whereas Marcy's picking up baseball bats and knocking people over the head. She puts a plastic bag on the teacher's head. And at the end, she's using a fucking scalpel to slash at people's face. Like, she is Gaga.
Well, look, what made me laugh is that she's invisible, but she's not super strong. And she just picks Cordelia up from the... Do you have any idea how heavy it is to lift someone from the floor? I can't even lift my 11-year-old daughter anymore.
I do believe, you know, that if you turn invisible through the helmet, you do are given super strength.
Yeah, that probably explains it.
I just made up.
Oh, what's so funny is when she's got the shawl over her head and she's going, oh, ow, ow, because Buffy's knocked her out.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny. But I do like the edge, you know, that she's violent.
Oh, yeah.
Every time you get comfortable with Buffy, I feel like it really, like, pulls the rug out from underneath you.
Yeah, I mean, she almost killed Harmony. That fall down the stairs could have killed her.
And then we knighted one of the all-time great villain-hero confrontations. Soul Slayer, at last we meet. We've met Harmony, you halfwit. Do you know, it's funny how the dialogue sticks in your head, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think this is the first time she gets a name.
What, Harmony? Well, we've seen her, though, haven't we? She was in the pilot.
Yeah, she's in a few episodes, but she's one of Cordelia's minions.
Was she the one that was with her when Willow went, oh, yes, press Del, and she deletes all the program? Yeah. Doesn't Harmony turn up in Angel as well?
Yeah, she does. She becomes a main character in Series 5.
Does she? Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sold, Martin. Let's watch Angel.
And in the comics, she goes on to have her own reality TV show.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question now, because I know Spike becomes a regular in Series 5 as well. So is there a suggestion there that Angel is flagging a bit in Series 4, that they're having to bring in Spike and Harmony, and I know Andrew turns up as well. So we're bringing in all these sort of Buffy staples.
Yeah, because in Series 4, Charisma Carpenter got pregnant, so they kind of have to hastily write in a story to explain her being pregnant, and that entire storyline isn't great, and fans hate it. And spoilers, they also put Angel and Cordelia in a relationship. Yeah, both actors were against it. They didn't think that it felt right, and they had to do
Wasn't that. There an inference that Joss Whedon was not happy that she was pregnant, so he being terrible for her character?
Yeah.
Oh, can I say, right? I still haven't. But I did watch a documentary. There's a little sort of 16-minute interview with all the cast. And Charisma Carpenter was saying that she got the call from Amber Benson saying, we're going to do this audio series of Buffy. And Charisma Carpenter was like, no, I'm not doing it. And then Amber was like, no, please, you trust me, hear me out. And they had a long conversation about it, the two of them. And she's like, I want to do great things with your character. I really want everybody on board for this, you know, trust me. And Charisma Carpenter basically says, I did it because I love Amber. And I think she's a fine, creative person. And I really wanted to work with her. So I think we've got Amber Benson to thank for all of that.
Oh, well.
Because apparently Emma Caulfield didn't want to do it either. And she said, no, I love Amber and I'll do anything for her. But if anyone else had called, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, I think it helps that Joss Whedon just gave his blessing for it and wasn't directly involved. So I think the only person who really interacted with him was Amber Benson.
Oh, okay. Did he have any creative input?
I think he got like script approvals or something like that, but he didn't get any money for it and he didn't have any creative say.
Given the controversy, I think that's probably the best we could have hoped for. But that is also quite magnanimous as well, to say, look, go and do this thing. You've got my blessing. I know the fans will get, there'll be more Buffy out there.
I do wish he would give his side of accounts.
Yeah, well, maybe it will throw an unseen light on, which is the way to do it.
Maybe. But then does anybody really want to hear from the accused in a situation like this?
Trouble with those things is there are two sides to every story, but there's too many accounts, I think, for there not to be something to what they're saying. And I think that whole environment of making TV and movies is so fraught and it's so emotional that sometimes the creatives do lose their way a little bit. I know with Doctor Who that happens. There's actual footage of Tom Baker swearing and being appalling on set. Yeah. And yet we still love him, but he was behaving appallingly. I think it happens. It shouldn't happen, but it does happen.
I mean, I guess things got so bad on Doctor Who, Christopher Eccleston left.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
How did we get here?
I don't know. What I'm wondering, though, is Joss Whedon just a prick, or is he just an example of a prick that exists in that world?
I think Joss Whedon is a fertile creative mind with a uncomfortable passion. His work is displayed in unfairness.
Because if someone's just a prick, I can kind of see past that. At least it wasn't like sexual misconduct or something like that. I'd have a harder time getting my head around that.
What I will say is I don't at all endorse any of that sort of behaviour.
Oh, not at all, yeah.
But it does not affect my enjoyment for this incredible show. Like, the work they produced as a team, it's not all Joss Whedon, as a team, the actors, the directors, the writers, it's an extraordinary piece. And I don't think any of the sort of behind-the-scenes nightmares, if they occurred, when they affect my...
Absolutely. So, getting back onto the subject at hand, I saw a quote from Cleo Duvall, where she said she went for She went for her audition, and she was like, they're making a TV series of that shit film.
Is that Marcy?
Yeah.
That you're talking Marcy, about that. Ah, yeah. Oh, well, I'm sure a lot of people thought that until it started gaining a bit of traction, which it did, didn't it? Suddenly people were talking about Buffy.
Oh, I did. And she's gone on to have a great career. Like, she's worked pretty much solidly since she did this.
Yeah, well, and I think as we go on, in season two, you have the main star of Roswell turning up, don't you?
Yeah.
In season seven, you get Nathan Fillion showing up. Like, suddenly, Claire Kramer is the main villain in series five.
Yeah.
Who's the fella that plays the mayor? He's a well-known actor. He's done every show you can imagine.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, but yeah, I've seen him in other stuff.
We're going to start seeing the big names turning up soon. Who do you think's the biggest name in Buffy? Amy Mann from Sleeper?
I don't know. Who's gone on to have the biggest career since? It kind of skews your judgment.
Well, it's probably the regulars, isn't it? Mm. I mean, all the regulars have gone on apart from... Yeah. I've seen Emma Caulfield do great work post-Buffy.
Yeah, she was in WandaVision recently.
Oh, she was great in that as well.
Yeah.
I've written down some quotes and I can't possibly depart this episode without regaling you with them. Are you ready?
Go on, say a quote and it might spur it in my mind what Penny thought you'd like.
A vampire in love with a slayer. It's rather poetic in a maudlin sort of way. That's a great line. That is a fantastic. But also as well, Giles goes to Cordelia, I don't recall ever seeing you here before. And her response is, oh no. I have a life.
That's the one.
Isn't that great? And Cordelia also goes, being this popular is not just my right, but my responsibility. She's such a bitch. Oh, and finally, it's a trio of Cordelia lines. You ready? You were popular? In which alternative universe? I'm making a note of these so I can use these in my life.
I love that it's called Delia that goes on to have the alternate universe experiences.
Oh, which is fabulous. And doppelganger. My, we got some great stuff to come.
Yeah, and even in Slayers, that's an alternate universe Cordelia.
I mean, I don't know where you want to end this, but as a sort of an end, I think Out of Sight, Out of Mind, I think it's well directed. I think it's well written. It's well acted. And it really leans into the Buffy premise in a very strong way. And with that sort of tag at the end, you know, the invisible class, I think it's got a brilliant as well. But astonishingly, the best is yet to come. I mean, we're now, Prophecy Girl is next, and then we're into series two, and some of the best is in series two.
Yeah.
So we're in a sort of advantageous position of this is good, but great in the way.
Well, these are solid foundations to build the great structure that will come.
But I do think it's worth noting that season one, the much lamented season, is a lot stronger than suggested.
Yeah, I mean, people give this series a really hard time, but I would say this episode is in the top half of the first series.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And stuff like the puppet show, stuff like Angel, you know, we've had a couple of duffers, but overall the quality has been pretty high.
Yeah.
But I can only imagine that the network were absolutely by this, what was it called, hasty last minute half season replacement altogether.
Yeah. All right, Joe, I'd say we've talked this to death at the moment. We've talked mostly about other things, but you know, we're out of practice. We're a bit rusty.
I think we at least talked about Out of Sight, Out of Mind for 25 minutes.
And we'll be back next week to talk about Prophecy Girl. And I thought after that, maybe we'll go back to where it all started and talk about the movie.
Oh, excellent. Are we going to do Prophecy Girl as a commentary, like we said before?
Whatever you want to do.
Let's do it. I think we should do the finales as commentary, so we're doing live reactions.
Okay, we'll do that.
Oh, baby. Well, I'll see you next week then.
All right, see you next week.